Hey, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, ever striving to be fact-based, open to divergent perspectives, and always actively optimistic. Today we're talking with Liza Reed. She is the Research Manager for Electricity Transmission at the Niskanen Center. Before Niskanen, she was with Great Lakes Energy Institute at Case Western Reserve University. She has a PhD from Carnegie Mellon in public policy and in engineering. She has a master's degree and a bachelor's degree in electrical and computer engineering from Ohio State University. So we're talking about something that's been under many of our radars as we look into the cleaner energy future, and that's how we get green energy from where it's produced to where it's needed, two very different places. Dr. Reed is expert in this area, so let's hear what she has to say on the topic. Okay, Dr. Liza Reed, welcome to Climate Talk.
Thank you. So great to be here.
So let's just start off. Could you give us an overview of what the Niskanen Center is, what it does, and what brought you there?
Absolutely. The Niskanen Center is a DC-based public policy think tank and advocacy organization. We believe that to rise to the challenges that we face in the 21st century, we have to draw from the best ideas on the progressive and the conservative side of discussions. And so what that means is that the policies we promote are both pro-market and pro-government. In the climate space in particular, we believe rapid decarbonization requires markets and governments, right? There's a strength and benefit that can really accelerate the pace of change away from fossil fuels. Governments set rules for markets, but also need to make sure that we can streamline regulation that isn't getting in the way of getting technologies and infrastructure built that can ensure our clean energy future.
Wow, that's a great summary. And I find it particularly interesting because over time, I've kind of evolved myself into seeing that if we're going to address climate change in any kind of effective way, we can't just pick a ideological perspective and go with that. We're really going to have to listen to each other, understand the ins and outs, know that there are some situations where the market response is the best response and other situations where the market just can't do it and the government needs to have a finger in that pie. So we're talking today about long distance electricity energy transmission. And I got to say that this has just sort of slipped onto my radar over the last couple, 3 months. And I've been talking to fellow climate activists in the last month or two, and I get a lot of really strange looks when I start talking about long distance electric transmission. It's something that people who are active don't have a handle on. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So that's your area of expertise. So what's our situation with long distance electric transmission? Do we have enough? And if we don't have enough, why don't we have enough?
Yeah, absolutely. So transmission is fallen under a lot of folks' radar. Company there, as you noted. And it's kind of a wonky space because it's highly regulated, right? Markets, when we think about markets and energy, they're looking at the energy itself, but transmission is the infrastructure that gets energy into the market. It's the infrastructure that gets that power to where it needs to be to be distributed to our homes. And historically, it's been regulated at the state level. And that made a lot of sense for a long time because we could move coal power on trains and we could move natural gas on pipelines. But as we expand clean energy resources, wind and solar need to be generated where they are. And the way that we move them, the equivalent of coal trains and gas pipelines, is electricity transmission, right? And so what we've seen, particularly in the last few decades and certainly the last 10 years, is how much more transmission we need to unlock those abundant clean energy resources that we have.
So just interestingly, I noted this morning that Yale Climate Communication had a significant article out on the issue of electric energy transmission. And I've also noted a Princeton study recently that says if the Inflation Reduction Act goals are met, we're going to have a whole bunch of electric source we're not going to be able to get it to where it's needed. So what do we need to change to make that happen?
So the way, you know, I said transmission has historically been regulated at the state level. And what we've seen is that's been really good for expanding transmission within a state, right? But a lot of that is more of the low power, and with the exception of some very large Western states, not necessarily very long distance, right? But if we want to be able to move our wind and solar around the country, we need these long distance lines, and that touches multiple states. These high voltage lines, so high power lines, have to be high voltage, right? That makes them much more efficient, right? So these long distance lines that you're talking about, also high voltage, right? They're crossing multiple state barriers. And the way we regulate them today, everybody along the pathway needs to give the check mark that we can build this transmission line. That's not how we build natural gas infrastructure, for example, right? Natural gas, more than 80 years ago, the natural gas industry recognized that they needed to be able to move pipelines across states. And the federal government established that interstate natural gas pipelines should be regulated by the federal government, right? Should be sited by the federal government. That's the situation we're in transmission now, right? The only way we're going to be able to move this wind and solar is interstate lines. And if you have to get everyone's approval along the way, not only does that slow things down, but what we've seen is that states aren't approving them, right? It's not just that it's taking more time. States are saying, well, you know, my legislation, public utility commissions, look at what legislation says, and they have to approve lines that are specifically valuable to a state. Well, long distance lines provide a lot of benefits to a lot of places, right? And so like, well, you get some benefit and this other state gets another benefit, but like who decides when it's enough, right? That's why these interstate lines just make so much more sense to be regulated by the federal government, but that literally requires an act of Congress.
Yeah. So speaking, well, just first off, just to step back a second, and it's almost, like an Alice in Wonderland situation where something is needed, but there are barriers there. So I can imagine, like, let's say a high power line goes all the way through the state of Colorado, headed down to Southwest US, where there's lots of need for this energy. And Colorado says, well, how are we going to benefit from having this line go through here? And our law says we have to benefit from it. So, I mean, isn't that a mess?
That's exactly right. And that's what happens, is that regulators say, well, I can't approve this line. Whereas the federal government, if they had the authority to approve interstate transmission lines, could say, this is too important, right? This is important for the entire region. And so they could move forward and cite the line. And what we've seen, you know, there's some interesting studies. You mentioned a couple of them. You know, we need to likely double our transmission capacity to meet our clean energy goals, if not higher, sort of depending on the pace and scale of clean energy production. And transmission needs to lead the way in that so that we can get that clean energy to grid. There's a really interesting article that I read in Bloomberg a couple weeks ago that the Great Plains, which has abundant wind and solar resources, has actually been seeing negative power prices because they're already not able to export enough energy to everybody else. And there's folks who want that energy, right? Yeah. The Midwest could really use more low cost energy if we had that transmission to get it out of the Great Plains. And so the market opportunity is there, right? Going back to our market versus government, there is a market opportunity, and there are developers trying to pursue those market opportunities, but this state by state process is hamstringing it. And, you know, there's a group, it was out of Princeton and in a partnership with a group called Evolved Energy as well, that looked at what you said, those IRA investments from the Inflation Reduction Act are expected to really expand our clean energy generation, but without increasing the pace of transmission expansion, we're not actually going to get enough onto grid to reach our emissions targets, right? In the past 5 years, transmission expansion has slowed. And if we maintain that pace, then we're not going to meet our emissions targets. But if we can regain the pace we used to have in transmission and be able to build these interstate and high capacity lines in particular, then we're able to actually get that clean energy onto the grid and be displacing more sort of high emissions energy.
Yeah, for some reason, the whole Alice in Wonderland metaphor keeps popping up for me in my brain as I listen. It's just like almost like, well, this is crazy. One of my favorite people in the world is a guy named Dan Ariely. He's a behavioral economist. And one of the things he said was that if we wanted to create a problem that human beings were particularly ill-suited to address, it would be climate change. And of course, here we've got it. And the stuff you're pointing out, I mean, there are reasons we got to the place where here you kind of sketched out the reasons why we got here, but now we have to change. And yet our system seems so resistant to change that it just leaves a big question mark in my mind. So in terms of national legislation, so fill in some blanks for me here. I believe there was an effort recently to streamline the permitting process for high energy transmission lines, but Senator Manchin from West Virginia was calling for streamlining pipelines too. So then you had a left versus right situation. So do I understand what that situation was correctly? And of course, it didn't get passed.
Right. It's pretty complex. There were a lot of pieces to the permitting package that Senator Manchin proposed, and you're right. It raised hackles sort of across the whole spectrum. But I think what got a little lost in that was the benefits that those transmission provisions would provide, right? And that streamlining permitting for clean energy infrastructure is so important, right? Figuring out what is the right home for things like interstate transmission lines, right? And what are the barriers they're facing? We know for sure they're facing the state barrier. And I think, you know, one of the things that also makes this, one of the things that has also been kind of mixing up the conversation is that there was the IIJA, right? The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act falls right off the tongue.
Yeah.
Back in November, and that made some changes to transmission as well, and provided some funding. And so, I think even for some climate advocates, I've been hearing, "Well, we already did something, right?" But that something wasn't enough, right? And back in November, it seemed like, "Oh, maybe there's some opportunity here." But if you talk to folks who work in the transmission space, looking at the changes that were made in IIJA to how transmission is sited, it created a slightly stronger federal authority for siting transmission lines. But we need something a lot clearer,
yeah.
Right? We don't want, I mean, the situation we have now still has delays, right? States review it, and then the federal government can overrule the states, but then they also have to wait a year, and it's only in certain circumstances, right? It's all like very complex, and with an overregulated process, we don't need to add more regulation to it, right? What we really need to be doing is finding the areas where we can sort of strip it down to the right size, right? There's lots of transmission that makes sense for states to be siting and permitting, right? There's lots of, I mean, between 100 kilovolts and 300 kilovolts, like those transmission lines are falling in state footprints. I mean, I grew up in Rhode Island, so it's possible that you're getting Rhode Island might be running those across state barriers. Most states are seeing those in their own footprint. But high voltage lines are more likely going to be going long distances, like you said at the get-go, right? Let's carve out that role and say, okay, this makes sense for the federal government to just do instead of creating an on top of regulatory process.
Yeah, so it does seem like there's some opportunities here for a left-right dialogue, because traditionally conservatives kind of rebel against overdone
exactly.
permitting processes. And so, okay, folks, let's smooth out the permitting here. So what's the left going to have to bend on this stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I think you're exactly right, that I think this is an opportunity for folks across the aisle, across the spectrum, right, to really see the value. I mean, this is energy infrastructure, right? This is resilience. This is energy abundance. This is clean energy opportunities. You know, the question of what to bend on when it comes to transmission, I think it's just figuring out where the fit is, right? You know, instead of this DOE process, you know, this DOE and FERC and states process, I really do think there's an opportunity to just come together and recognize that a narrow, clear federal role just makes sense for everybody.
Okay, so let's look at a little different aspect here. So we're talking about how many transmission lines we have, what our capacity is. There's also the issue of how long it takes to build it. So if we streamline this permitting process, is that going to make it faster to from the time a firm somewhere or an agency says we're going to put in a transmission line to the time that the first electrons flow through that? Is this going to speed that process up? And what has to happen for it to be a faster process?
Yeah, it definitely will speed it up. You know, there's other opportunities, I think, to look at across the permitting spectrum, and I am far less expert on those. But if you look at how these interstate lines have been permitted in the past, sometimes you're only energizing part of the line while you get the approvals in another state before you can energize the whole line, right? Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons that these processes can take so long. And then if a state, you know, wants a line to change, that can re-trigger a whole permitting, you know, series of decision making. So that's another reason that getting the siting right will help grease the skids on the other permitting things. That's not to say that we don't also need to take a look and sort of clarify how different energy infrastructure is permitted. But again, that's less my expertise.
Yeah, understood. So I'm just wondering, we got an election coming up here. Let's just dabble in that for a second. So is Niskanen looking at this election with any particular perspective? I mean, are there good outcomes or bad outcomes that we could expect from this election in terms of electricity transmission?
I mean, for us, good outcomes are folks who appreciate that energy infrastructure is good for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I will say that we have to be speaking to both the left and the right on that subject, because I think that both the left and the right have the reasons to say yes, and they both have reasons to say no, and we need to sort those out and get to a place, because this is a problem from my perspective, what I've learned in the last few months. This is a problem that's not going to go away, and that it's potentially part of a climate train wreck downstream for us if we don't get this answered. Is that right?
Yeah, a climate train wreck, and also just like a cost, right? We've seen energy prices increasing, and we have this low-cost energy that we should be deploying, right? Again, like those great, I can't stop thinking about these negative prices in the Great Plains. And if you pull up a map of what folks in the Midwest are paying, like day in and day out, you can regularly see Indiana paying higher prices than Iowa, right? And we can share those resources if we can get more transmission built.
Yeah. So let's just fill in a blank a little bit on the negative prices thing. So I'm going to give you what my layperson understanding is, and you tell me if I've got it right or not. So one of the features of electricity, of course, is that it's created just in time. I mean, we have to be managing our supply and demand of electricity constantly. And if some facilities short on electricity, they go out and buy some from somebody else. And so that marketplace makes the price go up and down. So if there's a negative price, that tells me that somebody's got so much electricity that they've got to get rid of it. And they're actually paying people to take this electricity off their hands, which, once again, I'm thinking Alice in Wonderland. I mean, is that right?
That's a great description of it. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because it sounds like a good thing, right, for the Great Plains. Oh, you're paying me to get electricity. What ends up happening is that messes up the bottom lines for energy generation, right? So overall, that's really bad for the system, right? And those generators still need to be in the black so that we can maintain we can maintain any of our energy use, right? And so if we can be sharing that power, right, then we get that other folks who need it right next door, you know, across these borders, can be getting that energy, and then all energy generators are benefiting from it.
So this is a little off the wall question, so forgive me for that, but it just occurs to me. So basically, the way I understand it is the United States is divided up into three different areas in terms of sharing electricity. So we've got basically East and West, and we got Texas. So is that a tenable way of doing things long term?
So we have East and West in Texas, but the East in particular is further divided up into these, they're called independent system operators. It sort of doesn't matter, but the point is they're sort of subgrids within the East, right? And that's where the Great Plains and the Midwest are basically subgrids within the East that could and should be sharing more power, right? And same with the Mid-Atlantic states, right? Like there's opportunities, they're actually like fairly isolated grids, even within the East. And you know, from a geographic perspective, there's reasons that we're divided up. It's actually pretty hard to maintain stability across thousands of miles. Mm-hmm. But there's technology ways that we share that power, right? There's ways that the East and West connect. Texas has historically sort of been separate for regulatory, that sort of their regulatory choice. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to be sharing more power between the East and West, to be sharing more power between these subregions and with Texas. And quite frankly, a necessity to do it, right? I mean, the heat waves that we saw this past summer, the winter storms, right? These are all showing that we need to be sharing more power with each other, because what's hitting California and Texas today is going to be hitting other places, you know, tomorrow, next year, et cetera.
So it seems like a really challenging situation. So let me just ask you a personal question real quick. I mean, do you like doing this, or do you sometimes wonder why the heck you chose this field?
Yes. Yes and yes. I love it. I mean, I got my PhD in this area, right? I mean, it is something that I just think is so interesting. One thing that I love about it is that when I talk to people about it, everyone gets engaged, right? Like it's a pretty wonky topic, but it's also something that's like really, that people do understand. They understand that they want clean energy. They understand that they want low cost energy, right? They understand those pieces. And so that's been really quite fulfilling, quite frankly, is that folks come to conversations thinking like, well, you know, electrical engineering, right? This is going to be too much, but there's lots of ways to talk about transmission and why we need it, and even what the barriers are that lots of people understand and get pretty excited about. Just figuring out how we scale that up to 300 million people.
Yeah. So just a quick aside on costs. So I drive an electric car. I mean, I feel like I probably have a negative carbon footprint with solar on my house, electric car, all electric house and so on. And I belong to this kind of online coffee clutch thing with some other guys where we get together once a week. And not too long ago, one of the guys said, who was in Colorado, says, how much is gasoline out there in Washington State? And I and a couple other guys with electric cars like, we don't know. And so it is so amazing to be able to access that cheap energy. And all we got to do is get it from A to B reliably. So with all of this, and forgive me for calling it craziness, because it does seem crazy. With all of this craziness, what can give us hope that we're going to be successful in getting the transmission lines we need?
Well, so there's a couple things that can give us hope. One is that we're having this conversation, right? Mm-hmm. The transmission, you know, isn't under the radar anymore for a lot of people. And that the combination of, you know, sort of energy abundance and energy costs, desires coming from the conservative side and like clean energy and climate change coming from the more liberal side, right? Both of those collide in transmission in a good way, right? Yeah. So that gives me a lot of hope that this is something that makes sense for everybody's goals. And the fact that, you know, Senator Manchin's permitting text included a recognition of that and trying to identify a faster federal role for a subset of transmission lines. That's valuable, right? When we're putting out new ideas for how to do this instead of sort of tweaking the old and cumbersome process, I think that's really important, right? These are both things that give me a lot of hope. The investments that we're seeing in clean energy, right? The more that we see that market mismatch, I think also just changes more hearts and minds too, in recognizing that there's an opportunity for everyone's benefit here, that just needs some changes in how we regulate things.
Yeah, and I'm seeing kind of a peripheral opportunity here too, and that is an opportunity for people all over the political spectrum to realize that they're going to have to listen to other folks. Like I'm thinking of Senator Manchin, for instance. I mean, some of my progressive friends, they practically turn purple just at the mention of his name because they pick him as the bad guy that's keeping us from doing stuff. But you just pointed out that bill that he'd introduced would have moved us a long way down the road towards being more effective with our energy transmission. So So thank you, world, for that growth opportunity for all of us. So we're just about finished here, Liza. And what anything that you'd like to give us before we do finish up?
This has been a great discussion. I really appreciate it. I mean, I think I'm excited for people to be talking more about transmission, and I welcome folks to reach out. I've got lots on the Scannon site that we've written on transmission. Happy to chat with anyone else who's interested in learning about it and what they can do. I don't know that I have anything else to add, right? That there's just lots of different ways to chip away at this, and thinking about goals for how we can share energy, and what that means for reliability and resilience. I just think is really important.
Well, for some strange reason, after this conversation, I'm feeling a little upbeat on the subject. Maybe it's your passion for the topic. And we will put some links for our show notes to the Niskanen site. And I've browsed around there a bit. You've got a lot of really good stuff on that site, and people will find it really valuable. So, Liza Reed, thank you so much for being on Climate Talk. I really love talking with you.
Thank you, John.
Thanks so much, Dr. Reed, for talking with us on this somewhat obscure topic, yet a topic with burgeoning consequences for our energy future. Our long-distance energy permitting evolved over time, and while it may have served us well at one time, it isn't serving us well anymore. In fact, it's a major worry. We may have cleaner energy in the future, but if we can't get it from where it's generated to where it's needed, we will fail in the cleaner energy transition. I would say for us as laypersons, we need to be aware of the problem, and we need to be engaged politically, because the problem is political, and as such, the solution is by necessity political too. You can contact me at john@ccltacoma.org for comments on this program or to make suggestions for future programs. The CCL part is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. Check it out. A bunch of good people. Join up or find another organization if you aren't already attached to join your voice with others. This program, along with all other locally produced Radio Tacoma programs, can be found on the KTAH website under Programming. So until we talk again, remember that all great victories were almost great defeats, and always live like the mountain is out. Take care now.